Well, it's 9:30, and I think we're going to get underway and assume that the other 500 people will join us in progress. I'm Marty Ringel. I'd like to start by introducing our panel this morning. Teresa Rowe from Oakland University, Brian Voss from Louisiana State University, and Bill Terry from Bard College. All are the CIOs of their institutions. And we're here this morning to talk about security. And some of you may have had the pleasure of seeing Brian and Brad Wheeler's talk yesterday about whether CIOs should be plumbers or strategists, which, by the way, Brian won that exchange. I'd like to offer a different metaphor for IT in this context, IT as dentists. Because when you stop and think about it, security is a lot like going to the dentist. It's expensive. It's often painful. And no matter how much you dislike it, you can't ignore it because the consequences of ignoring it are a lot more expensive and a lot more painful. But it really isn't fun. There are people who do IT security full-time for a living, and for them it's fun. But for CIOs and for the rest of humanity, it's not really fun. It's just something that we absolutely have to do. The question is, if we are not a large university, and by that I mean Indiana University, with 92,000 students and 1,000 staff members in IT and more resources than you can shake a stick at, how do we handle IT security, network security, given that as small to medium-sized institutions, we just don't have the kinds of resources that they have, but we do have the same kind of problems. So I'm going to give you a little pitch. This is a 30-second infomercial for something called the Research and Education Networking Information Sharing and Analysis Center, REN-ISAC. Are any of you already members of REN-ISAC? Okay, well, you've already been sold, so this is directed to the rest of you. The REN-ISAC was established in 2003 at Indiana University as one of perhaps 20 different ISACs under the auspices of the Department of Homeland Security to protect the nation's critical infrastructure. So there are ISACs for the electric power grid, for the highway system, and so on. And REN-ISAC is the one for the higher education research and education networking. And its mission and goal is to share information amongst the IT security experts among its member institutions in order to give each individual institution a greater depth of expertise, a greater profile for security and defense building. It is associated with EDUCAUSE and Internet2. It's only been around for a few years, but it already has more than 200 members. And for those of you who are from small to medium-sized institutions, its membership ranges in size from very tiny institutions, under 1,000 students, up to the behemoth that we know as Indiana University. Membership involves participating in listservs that include both general listservs for people like CIOs, whom the security folks don't want to admit to the inner sancta of security conversations, to the exec listserv, which is where they do their conversations and talk about the most arcane things. There are monthly tech bursts, webinars, there are advanced alerts, and other things that are particularly designed to help institutions that don't have a lot of resources themselves become and stay current with threats. The membership fee structure, as you can see in the slide, has got to be considered one of the greatest bargains in history. To get that kind of augmentation of your institutional expertise for under $1,000 a year, I don't know where else you can get that kind of leverage. And if you're interested, it's www.ren-isaac.net, and I invite you to visit the website. It's the public-facing website, so you don't have to worry that if you look at it, you'll see something really secret. But if you join, you will. The panel today is going to focus on six areas of interest: organizational commitment, disaster recovery and business continuity, intrusion and data management and education and awareness, and risk management, audits, and physical security. So we'll begin with our first speaker, Brian Voss.
Actually, is it me? I think it's Teresa.
Oh, excuse me. Teresa. Sorry.
Good morning, everyone. I think as I look at security, I'd like to emphasize that security is not a destination. It's a process and a trip. You won't wake up one morning and find yourself in a secure location. And anytime you're in an ongoing process, it takes the commitment of an entire organization, and an organization has to identify its values. Privacy is one that we can generally get a lot of buy-in around the table. And then we get our organization to commit to that kind of set of values that we keep working on in an ongoing process. That is something that is difficult sometimes to communicate, especially in our small organizations where we're looking for the next box on the conveyor belt to fund, and let's get the next box. And instead, we have to recognize that security is its own conveyor belt, and there's always another security project to do. It's more than an individual champion. It's more than a large staff. It's more than huge resources. And I say that, you know, for my organization, my staff member, Brian Page, and I are here. Here we are at EDUCAUSE. We got the resignation this week of our one and only network security engineer, the person who does all of our Bradford security and all of our DMCA complaints and the whole deal. So we're down to zero right now, and we're trying to figure out where we go next. Where does that commitment come from to sustain a process like that? And it has to come from all areas of the organization. It's senior administration and trustees. It's all the departments. We have to include our risk management folks, and they're often very strong allies because they're the ones that are going to clean up the mess and identify the funds to clean up the mess when things don't work. Everyone in your institution has a responsibility for security, and it's even the students. So the more we can get that message out to a broad-based community, the better off we are. We look at our institution, at those organizations that can best support us in that initiative, because I have another job besides paying attention to security all the time, and the one network security person is gone, so who's going to pick up all those pieces? It really has to be pervasive in the culture. It cannot just be one person's mission. One of the challenges we face as IT leaders who understand the risks and what we need to do is that as you say, it's a visit to the dentist. It's often very painful to implement the kinds of controls and components that we need to create a secure environment. It's a negotiated strategy, though, that works best. It's not a dictatorship. And it means sitting down with folks and explaining what the risks are, finding out what it is that they want to protect and how they see protection occurring in the environment, and having a strong conversation that involves all of the views of protection of assets. It cannot be just IT dictating out to the organization, this is what we must do, but getting that entire community involved. Senior administration needs to be sold on the value of a working program. And it's, again, an ongoing message. We're never done. We're not having problems today, and pointing out to them periodically, we avoided this problem or that problem because of your investment last year. It's an ongoing conversation to make sure they understand the value of what they're protecting and trying to understand what it is that they want out of this negotiated conversation. Usually, if we reach out to senior administration, we can start to hear what they want. And we hear a lot about policy development. And that's one of the areas where I reach out to the larger community, because I cannot invent every security-related IT process or policy alone on my campus. I look to see what my peers are doing, particularly peers with resources in an area who can develop those policies, and they're willing to share them with me. It really allows me to leverage what I'm doing, and it's a strong conversation with my senior leadership to be able to say, well, here's what my peers are doing in order to support a dental type of painful policy on our campus. Our senior leadership wants to know that they're avoiding financial penalties. They don't want to pay the costs of a data breach. They don't want that kind of financial risk impending there in the organization. They want to deal with those things. And if we can point out what we're trying to do and how it avoids costs downstream, we're reaching out to them. Anybody that's running an academic calendar knows that faculty cannot and students cannot tolerate any disruption of that calendar. And selling our security programs and strategies to the extent that we can show that they are protecting the integrity of that calendar is a very important message to senior leadership. What are our peers doing? We all want to know that we're not doing more than our peers. Are we being unreasonable in our security requirements? Checking it out. And nobody wants negative front page news, right? We don't want to wake up and see ourselves on the front page of the newspaper. So how do you create a program that does all of this? I look at my program and I try to emphasize that it's protecting people first. It's not about some esoteric techie thing over in the data center. We're about protecting people and what they value, which is usually their privacy first, their financial transactions, the information about themselves. We want to communicate and clarify that vision, and that can be tough around security, but if we focus on what other people want and how to get that message across, that generally helps communicate. We all want to believe that we're using our policies and security to promote some sort of organizational justice, that it's a fair and equivalent service and environment, and the punishments that are meted out are done with some sort of rational thought behind them. All of this has to reduce costs in our environment and support knowledge development. And if I'm going to accomplish all of these things with my staff of zero at the moment, I have to do that through community and partnerships. I cannot do that alone. Now, one of the key pieces that we can reach out to on our campus once we get beyond that privacy discussion is now talking to them about disaster recovery and business continuity, because every campus leader wants to talk about that. They want to know that the university is going to continue through any kind of adverse event. It's incident response, disaster recovery, it's pandemic flu. How many of you had discussions on your campus over the last couple of years about pandemic flu planning? I always love that conversation, that first conversation that we're going to, you know, pandemic hits, we're going to move all classes to the online environment that day. All those sick faculty are going to log on and do that. It's not reasonable. So you've got to have your incident response plan defined first, events that should be notified, how to notify, who to notify. That incident response plan has to include your campus community. All those people on your campus that we identified early as stakeholders, they need to know how and when to contact you. One of our tough ones is getting them to let us know when there's an electrical outage anywhere on campus, and they don't connect, that all of IT in that building is probably going to have a little bit of trouble if the electricity is out. But we also couple in our own monitoring, and one of the benefits we see from the larger community, how we leverage this again, is monitoring what the reports are from peer institutions. We don't have to monitor every threat alone. We don't have to discover that. We use RENISAC a lot for that, to identify those threats to us early. Create a formal incident response team. Know who is responsible for handling any kind of incident that is reported to you. We have a, quite a detailed plan on our campus, and we involve different people who, for example, we put our director of enterprise systems in charge of communicating to key campus offices early in a disaster because there's nothing for her to do to recover while we're recovering electricity and networks and things like that. She has time on her hands and great communication skills, so it's one of those pieces. And we do meet and practice regularly. The team has to think about preservation first, and that's one of the areas that we can skip. If there's any indication at all this could be an intentional hack or some sort of nefarious activity, the first thing to do is preserve any evidence, not necessarily jump back to return of service. And that's a conversation you need to have on your campus early on. How are you going to deal with that? Assessing scope and impact, severity, criticality, all of those things need to be defined in terms of action steps. None of the disasters I've lived through on my campus had the same flow. It's been everything from an environmental contamination that bugged us out for 6 weeks to a fire in the building to electrical outage on the East Coast. You cannot have a defined response to all those different kinds of events. But knowing what the steps are is incredibly important. Our disaster recovery plan is part of a larger crisis management team on our campus that involves all the senior leadership, and we have a major event every year. And now we're also engaging in another partnership, our local city and county government. And last spring, we had an area practice session on our campus that involved all of the first responders in the area, complete with fire trucks and police out with a mock active shooter situation and injuries on campus. It was quite a large rehearsal, but we got the entire community involved. This all flows into business continuity, and we have to have plans that continue operations in all departments, and that can be for short periods of time or long periods of time. Do you know at what point you would discontinue classes? Can you continue to offer classes in person while on, you may be shutting it down in person? Can the online class still continue, or does that going to throw off your academic calendar? All those kinds of discussions need to go into business continuity. We've determined that the longest that we could be out without disrupting the academic calendar is 2 weeks. So all of our planning is trying to make sure we return to service within 2 weeks in any kind of situation. We reuse other plans too, like strike plans and things like that. All of these pieces, if I summarize this, we have to engage the community. Privacy is one way to engage, and then move on to disaster recovery and business continuity and participate in the larger groups that may be developing these same strategies at the same time.
So you may be wondering why a guy from Megawampus State University in Louisiana is up on a lecture to the benefits for small and medium-sized colleges. And I want to reinforce that I just finished my role on the Higher Ed Information Security Council, the Joint EDUCAUSE Internet 2. I serve with Marty and Teresa and Bill on the REN-ISAC advisory group. And so I'm going to bring that perspective, but I also am going to talk. Are CIOs in the room? Okay, good, good. Brethren, sistren, good morning. When I originally did this slide, I had things all over the place, and Marty sort of put it back in order. But no, the whole idea was that, you know, there's just massive amounts of stuff out there that can kill you. And basically, whatever you were doing that day will stop if one of these things sort of jumps up and hits you. So this is why this is an important thing to pay attention to. Many of us have sort of dubbed these things as survival issues, you know, security, business continuity, running your information systems. Those sorts of things are things you have to do to survive. These are not things that are going to get you a lot of kudos. So pretty much the best thing that you can do is be invisible. If none of these things happen, you're good. And if any of these things happen, you're bad, and no one's going to give you an award for not having it happen. The other thing is that I've noticed that we have just this never-ending string of these things that happen. Disasters hit us, Katrina, earthquakes, floods, all those sorts of things. You know, the Chronicle, every week or two, somebody has leaked personal information or FERPA data or medical data, and this just goes on and on and on, and no one pays attention until it happens on your campus, and then people get the message. You're not going to be very successful. I've known several stories of CIOs who have gone forward to administrations with funding proposals to do this, that, and the other thing, and they get turned down because they aren't new initiatives. They aren't doing anything that's really going to be sexy. But, you know, just because you took that proposal forward and it didn't get approved doesn't mean that when something bad happens, you can hold it up like a shield and say, I told you so, because they'll say, yeah, thanks for telling me. You're out. So this all falls back onto us. That's a fact of life. Security is not just a technical thing. It's a functional thing. It's likely if you have small institutions, you're not going to be able to invest the, you know, 20 or 30 resources that someone like my colleague Brad Wheeler is in a position to do. But, you know, you are in it. And I have my little picture there from Guns of the Navarone. If you've seen that movie, great scene where he's, you know, telling the guy, you're in it now up to your neck. You know, that's what happens when you took the CIO role. So in the end, it really is something that you have to pay attention to. And it is not unsolvable. Believe me, I'm here to tell you. When I arrived at LSU, there was one half of one person doing IT security in an organization with about 180 FTE. Today, between security policy and DRBCP, we have 9.5 people who are doing it. And I didn't get any resources for that. I had to creatively reallocate within my budget because I knew this was something that was going to kill me if I didn't do it. So I think you as CIOs have to, I understand you may not have even the size of budget I have or half of it or whatever, but you're going to have to look at what do I have to do to stay alive. And you're not alone in this. I'm going to talk more about that in a bit. So I talked to my security officer about this and tried to get some framework for us. And, you know, he said, yeah, look at what you have. So let's say you do have people but not a lot of money. Well, there are ways to do that, whether you're leveraging other staff and you're networking in sysadmin area or you're getting student labor in. Appoint yourself a CISO, even if they are something else in your organization. Make them the main person who's going to go to on these issues and make it their responsibility. If you don't have people, but you have money, a lot of us are in situations where our base budgets are sort of constrained, but we sort of get to the end of the calendar year and we can always rely on a little bit of budget dust, miracle money that might be there. Make use of that. Go out and acquire some tools to help with that. If you tell me you have neither, I'm going to send you right back and tell you you've got to go figure out how you can get something. You're going to have to do some reallocation to get there. My CISO also said developing this defense in depth strategy when it comes to talking about intrusion issues. Again, got people. Not much money. There's lots of open source tools that are available out there that you can go get that don't cost you anything. If you've got money but not a lot of people, there are some commercial tools that you can go and acquire as well, which will help you do this. And probably the thing would be to figure out a way to do a little bit of both. On the data management side, I'm always struck by the fact that we're CIOs, right? And I always tell people the technology is soft and silent because that's what we really are. The information owners are the functional areas. Your finance office should own the financial data, your enrollment people, the student data. So this concept of data stewards is a good one to have. Get them to partner with making the policies as it affects the information and the data. Auditors, make use of audits. Bill's going to talk about that and have a vignette or two about that. But, you know, sometimes this is where we can take lemons and make lemonade by, if we get a finding in an audit, we can actually use that to make some progress where heretofore we weren't able to get attention on that. Relying on the courtesy and the friendship of others. You are not alone. Marty mentioned Ren ISAC. 700 going to 900 for a membership? It's a structured membership. It's not a lot of money, but it ties you into a whole host of resources, other people who are in your line of work, as well as the tools and things that the Ren ISAC has acquired to make you available of what's going on. Higher Ed Information Security Council, plug for that. That's a great organization if you are an IT security professional or someone who has it in your job share to get involved with that group. There's best practices out there. There's, you know, wheels that have already been invented that you don't have to reinvent that you can go get. There's working groups that you can get involved with and actually participate in some of these discussions and find collaborators to help solve common solutions. The other topic that I got assigned was education and awareness. You ever seen the guy who's just beating his head against the wall and he's just beating his head against the wall? Honestly, that's how I feel about education and awareness. We had just massive campaigns over the last 2 years at LSU on phishing, how to avoid phishing. We created this little character, Tad, the perils of Tad. And Tad was always falling victim to phishing things, and nasty things were happening to Tad. And we did this. We put ads in the student newspaper. We had all these little handouts. And yet, earlier this year, when there was the phishing storm, what did people do? They provided their login credentials because it looked like it was coming from the IT organization, when no way was it. And I said to my CISO, I said, well, let me see this. Maybe they're really good. You know, maybe it really is good. No. No, it was awful. It was just awful screens that made no sense and had misspelling words, and yet people still. And I'm not just talking about students. I'm talking about faculty and staff that did this. So, that said, you've got to still do this. This has got to be something, because if we hadn't done some of that education awareness, who knows how many people would have responded to this. You know, you're going to have to realize that this isn't going to completely cover the whole bell curve. If you get two standard deviations away from the median level of intelligence, you know, you're going to be in good shape, and you're going to get what you can out of it. I think you have to let people know what's going on with this. You've got to engage others in the community in terms of developing these things. There are lots of ideas about making people sign stuff. You know, I signed my mortgage. I have no idea what was in it. So, you know, I mean, I just knew I had to start paying. So, I mean, signing is not necessarily going to be due. I really like the concepts that a lot of institutions have, that when you screw up, you have to go to remedial training. And, you know, it's like my wife got several tickets and had to go to traffic school and had to go at night and be around people she really didn't want to be around in that particular environment, and she's not had any more tickets since then. So there are a lot of these things that you can do, very low cost. They can make some good impact, maybe not necessarily high impact, but there's good impact. Certainly work on developing student campaigns. There's actually an annual contest that HISC has in security awareness that involves having this do. Make your move, follow the directions. Not everything should be print. Little videos, little vignettes, little funny stories. You know, really try and get at what it is that people will pay attention to with regard to this. And again, really, don't go this alone. There's no reason to feel like if you are the person who has the security responsibilities, even if it's part of your CIO job to do, there are lots of places that you can get help with this. There's a lot of discussions that go on at the annual conference, at Internet 2 meetings. There's the working groups that are available in HISC that cover a variety of things. If you have the ability to get staff involved with those, it's good, because it not only serves the community by adding another resource to work in the group, it really plugs people into what's going on. Certainly, again, the Ren ISAC that Marty said, great value, great bang for the buck. It's a great place to get engaged. And it really, really does allow you to, you know, do the fishes and loaves thing, right? It really allows you to get a lot more benefit out of the staff and the investments that you make. Okay. I think I'm turning this over to you now, Bill.
I'm Bill Terry, and have done security in multiple environments, including at the moment at a very small liberal arts college that really has no security program to speak of at all, except an ad hoc sort of thing like we discussed. Many of you may be in that boat, and as these folks have said, seek out other people, talk. We go to regional conferences that I call group therapy sessions. You can consider this one too. Feel free to come up and talk afterwards. First thing I'm going to talk about is risk management. And it really is a function of assessments and then acceptance or mitigations and then compliance, verification, and audits. Now, some of our campuses have shown off auditors on the campus. Some don't. How many people actually have a full-time audit program on their campus? So half-ish. And if you do, you should consider getting them involved. I was at a slightly larger campus that I decided it made sense to invite them to everything we did. Anytime I had a meeting, the auditors came. Anytime we had a disaster, they got the first call after we got the important people called. And I also learned that if I told them that they were asking the wrong questions because they assumed we were in the wrong environment, I could help educate them. And once that started happening, we really got to be, I don't want to say buddies, but we got to be good team workers. And so when other auditors came in, we were a team, and we knew what was going on, and we sort of did the audits ongoing, as opposed to when we got to the formal audit, it just worked. Then when the state auditors came in a year or two later, we were ready. The security group was ready, the auditors were ready, the state auditors came in loaded for bear and ready to draw blood, and they didn't stand a chance, and at the end of it, we had done pretty well. Once you do some assessments, and you kind of have to look at what are things that make you worried, what keeps you awake at night, you have to look at these and then decide whether you're going to accept them or mitigate them. It doesn't make much sense to come up with a big list, and then everybody sit in the room and say, okay, we'll accept them. Next task. And I've seen that happen. That does not work. In an assessment, this is the formal picture, and I'm not going to go deeply in it, but this is how assessors come up, the cost times the probability. If the probability is high and the cost is high, you've got yourself a potential mess, and you're welcome to look at this, but more importantly are the balance of inputs that you get as you try and develop this risk panel. What are your senior administrators saying? What are your faculty saying? You go to them and talk to them. Give them some questionnaires, but also make them a team. And don't forget your students in this. Some institutions do bring in commercial auditors, and they may be viable, but they're certainly not required. As far as acceptance and or mitigation, as I mentioned, you've got to assign probability and risk, and high risk, high probability things are very important to take care of. If you've got some server that's breaking all the time and your payroll's on it, you better get it fixed, because my experience tells me that there is absolutely no more important application on campus than payroll. You don't pay them, they're not going to come back no matter what's going on. So keep that one in mind. Some of them are simple to fix. And then you've got to choose your battles. You can't waste your time on things that just should be accepted. With this comes lack of policies. If you don't have policies, your policy is that you don't have policies. And so that's very important to put that together in a risk program and part of a training program. Compliance and verification are ongoing processes. Some of you may have compliance audits, compliance officers. As I said earlier, auditors can be a nemesis or an ally. It's up to you, but get them involved. Talk with them. And you should do that with your compliance officers. Get a good, strong working relationship with almost everybody you report up to or sideways to, because that communication will and trust you build will stand up strongly with you as you move ahead. Another area that's quite important and we often forget is physical security. By physical security, I mean who's going to get in your data center? And this is just as important as looking at who's coming in through your network. Who's going to get into rooms that they shouldn't be. I personally have been in hospitals where I've put on a white coat and a stethoscope, and it's amazing where you can go doing that. I've also been on Navy bases and just pretended like I own the place, and it is amazing where you can go if you won't. So one needs to make sure that sort of structure is in place with card access systems, key access systems, and occasionally cameras. And you need to be able to get in if everything breaks down, too, and that is important. So you need to also develop an important relationship with your campus security force. Get to know who the number one or number two is there and talk to them from time to time. So when you have a problem with something stolen or something like that, you can go talk and you've already done it. If your campus office happens to be part of a real law enforcement office, you may want to have a structure such that if you're going to go pick up a computer, you go by and quietly ask them if there's any reason you shouldn't. Because if they happen to have an investigation going, you pick it up, everybody may be in trouble. But if you've got a good working relationship, that won't happen. Another thing they may be able to help you with is physical security assessments. Once again, it's a question of finding risks and how do you address them. They should be able to help you with that. If not, I could probably dig up a sample form and de-identify the places that it took place, and you might find that useful. Also, as I said, the physical security people can help you with investigations. I wanted to mention the facilities people. They're extremely important. Environmental management can ruin your day if your server room's too hot. How many of you have ever had a 140-degree server room? This is not an uncommon problem, I see. It's important to work with them on that sort of thing and designing ahead and ongoing maintenance. And once again, it's building these relationships. And that's it. I think we're going to open it up for questions.
And discussion.
There's a microphone in the center of the room if you like. If not, then just shout it out and we'll repeat it back so everyone can hear. So, question? Yes.
Yeah, just stand until they shut it off. That's a good point. You're building the trust both ways.
I'm going to use a microphone. Yeah, were people in the back able to hear that? No. So this gentleman was just observing that having an alliance between IT and physical security is very valuable if physical security can report immediately that a device has been stolen. IT can often see that the device has reappeared somewhere on the network and can track it. And so the alliance between physical security, the campus security forces and the IT forces, those are good allies. It's a good alliance to create. Other questions or comments? Yes. And could you use the microphone there so everyone could hear? Thank you.
There seems to be a perennial question about whether security organizations should be integrated or disintegrated from IT. I'm just wondering if the panel could speak to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think there are many ways to skin the cat, and a lot has to do with institutional culture, the role of the CIO. If the CIO is not sort of at a cabinet level, kind of interface position, and there's been some history of some issues, sometimes it makes sense for that person to be at a position reporting to a chancellor or provost or president simply to get the attention on it. Generally, though, I think that since it often all is interconnected with technology, it's good to have it in the CIO portfolio. And I often think a lot of times when it gets established someplace outside, it's because the CIO wasn't paying attention to it and became viewed as part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution. So, there are times I wish my CISO was maybe more plugged into the chancellor because, we need to scream bloody murder about things. But usually we found that we were able to scare the hell out of deans and others with sort of vignettes and if this happens, I hope you've got money to send out 17,000 notification letters because your colleague just did. I think that can be made to work best.
One thing that I found works at multiple campuses is inside the IT department is a good place, but there needs to be a dotted line reporting out and around the CIO so that they know that you feel safe and coming to an executive VP or something like that. And you should meet with that person, if nothing else, in the hallway at least once a quarter so that you feel comfortable doing it. But also don't forget that typically the physical security and the IT security are typically quite different, and it's important that you keep going back and forth there too.
My slogan is, it's better to do security than to have security done to you.
Yes.
So, Jack?
I'll throw one tip out, and then I have a question for the panel. And that is, many schools have centers of academic excellence. I think there's probably about 150 or more centers of academic excellence that the government has set up. I know every state has multiple entities where they've got this, where they're teaching cybersecurity, trying to train students. And I was going to highlight what we have done is we actually tap into students. And what we're doing is we help train the cyber security team that works in these contests that they end up having. Two or three of the students work for us. They work for my security officer. Many of them will do some very basic kinds of forensics analysis, or they'll monitor log files. We make the students sign a special agreement about the fact of the access that they're getting. I have less worries about using students in my area because most of them want to go on and get jobs at the National Security Agency. And so if they mess up, they're doomed from ever getting into the National Security Agency. But I just highlight that. I don't know if others are using students in any capacity, but we have found them to be an incredible resource in helping our security team. And my security team, for a staff of about 80 full-time staff, is one person. Now, my question that I come back to you is, I ask my security officer, what does the Wren mean to him in terms of what value he gets out? And he said, it's about like having a second person in the security team. So it's like adding an FTE, because he said, I'm able to bounce off technical ideas to other people who I respect, because and get input before I actually tried doing them, and it's been invaluable in that part. But I'm wondering, from your perspectives, how have you talked to your security officer, and have you gotten any feedback? Because for me, if I can pay $900 to get an extra FTE, that's a deal I'll take in any organization.
Well, Jack, you know the answer to this, but I'll say, you know, for everyone's benefit, I thought the REN was so important that at the outset, when I arrived at LSU, I carved out a half of a person and donated that to the REN. And the reason I did that was not just because I'm magnanimous and wealthy, was magnanimous, not necessarily wealthy. And good looking, I like that. Thanks. Thanks, Jack. Was because I felt that plugging my folks into the REN itself, not just even the sort of community of REN, but the REN itself, making my people do the scans and work with the REN people, was going to up the level of skill and knowledge in my security operation. And it did. And so for the first couple of years, the REN, when it was costing no one anything, was costing me $30,000 a year to participate. Now, since, you know, in total, you know, openness, what happened was is the REN was so satisfied with the level of support they were getting from us for a half contribution, they then paid us to hire the other half of the person to work in there. So, but I'm still, you know, I'm giving the REN a full resource and getting paid for half of it. And the value to me is just so incredible. Because now my folks, they think with that mindset. They're not just thinking local campus. They're thinking broader issues and broader scales of attack. So it's very much worth it.
I want to second that idea of moving beyond thinking about just your campus and thinking about all of the threats that are coming at your campus. And that's an incredible resource for us. We could not do that, and we're not doing that before the REN. Before we became involved in the REN. And it's, I go back to the earlier question too about separating off the IT department. We don't have enough people to look at separating them. So you'd really be taking a person and carving them up to too many different hats. They already wear multiple hats. So I have somebody that I need to be the point person reaching out to all of these organizations, pulling that information in and synthesizing it into an action plan that they can then work on and reach out to the community. And I think there's value there of more than one FTE when all is said and done. And that's at the network security level. I go back to my level. There's been times when I need to bounce a security issue or strategy off a group, and really I don't know where I'd turn in my organization to do that privately. You know, there are lists out there where it's public and maybe vendors are there and news media and everything else, and sometimes I have issues that I need to talk over with trusted security peers that I don't want included as a CIO. I don't want the other people included in that discussion. The REN has added that value for me.
As long as we're talking about the REN a little bit, I wanted to give you two examples. I was trying to find one here that I could quote from a little bit. Most days we put out a daily watch report, which is a summary of high, medium, and low vulnerabilities that come from everywhere. And the summary they do is quite good, from places like Microsoft and Secunia and just summary kind of things. And then things we see and traffic reports of types of IPs, where they're coming from, or what ports they're probing on. And this is quite handy. I've also picked up my phone at 2 in the morning and called the help desk, ran help desk, because I couldn't get a hold of my people. And somebody answers, and I said, "Can you tell me what the hell's going on my network?" And they could. He said, "There's a whole lot of stuff coming out of your network." And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "Give me just a minute." And he starts telling me what kind of thing it is. And then he says, "Let me look and see who else has this problem in the country." And he says, "It's an internal problem on your campus because," and he wouldn't say that if it wasn't true, "I don't see it anywhere else." And he says, I think you've got something that's spewing. It turns out we had a spanning tree problem that just ate us alive. But they were able to help me with that. And he couldn't, the guy on and duty at 2 in the morning couldn't quite do it. He called one of them at home and got them to get on and help me. And that help all was there and solid in an hour. He said, if you need any help, call back. And I said, if you see anything different, call back. And he said, you know I will. And boy, you just can't beat that.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank the panel for doing a great job with the presentations. And I want to thank everybody in the audience for joining us and for your patience and interesting questions. Thank you.